This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Saturday night saw the worst mass shooting by a single shooter in modern U.S. history. An Afghan-American man named Omar Mateen has been identified by law enforcement as a shooter in a massacre at a gay club in Orlando called The Pulse, that left 50 people dead and 53 hospitalized. Immediately, media outlets claimed the shooter had pledged allegiance to ISIS and labeled it a terrorist attack. The shooter, who was among those who died, was an employee of the global security firm G4S. On the same weekend that the horrific massacre took place in Orlando as well, The Voice star Christina Grimmie was fatally shot by a white American man named Kevin James Loibel. A black woman named Jessica White was killed in the Bronx while shielding her three children from a shooter in a park. And a Latino man named Juan David Villegas Hernandez has been identified as a shooter in the murder of his wife and four children in New Mexico. It has been a bloody weekend. My guest is Andrew Patrick, Deputy Communications Director at the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, obviously, this horrific shooting stands out. And then even the shootings that claimed one life here, a few lives there. How common or how consistently are Americans dying from gun violence in the United States, even if we set aside these mass shootings that claim dozens of lives?
I think you really hit the nail on the head, Sonali. This is a day-to-day problem. We have 33,000 people killed by guns every single year in this country through suicides, homicides, and accidental or police shootings. This is something where eight children are shot every single day in this country, either accidentally or on purpose. There is a drumbeat in this nation since the Sandy Hook massacre 3 years ago that is continuing to gain steam. Americans are becoming fed up with living in a country where gun violence is accepted and their lawmakers do nothing about it. So that is continuing to happen, and we are working to change and bring stronger, safer gun laws to American soil.
I want to play a video for our audience of the testimonies of witnesses, worried loved ones on Saturday night, early Sunday morning in Orlando, Florida, near the Pulse nightclub, just to give us a sense, to sort of bring us face to face with what it means when one is personally impacted by gun violence.
I don't know where my son is. No one can tell me where my son is. If he's been shot, if he's dead, no one knows.
I was hearing the bang, bang, bang. I thought it was part of a song. Maybe Ying Ying Twins, you know, it sounds like something they'd come out with. And then when you turn around, the person next to you is like screaming, there's blood splattering. I didn't know if it was mine or somebody else's.
He was shot?
We don't know. He's in the women's bathroom with the hostage. He's hostage from the shooter.
How did you find out?
He was texting me and called me.
What did he tell you exactly?
That the shooter has them in the women's bathroom hostage and he's gonna die. We was talking and I made him get off the phone because I had a dispatcher on one phone and him on another one. And he said he didn't want to look at the man because he might look and get shot.
All of a sudden we heard like boom, boom, and we thought it was like the stereo. We're like, oh my goodness, it's something went on with the, you know, just the music. And after the second shot, there was a pause, and then it just started shooting. And that's when we knew something was wrong, when everybody just dropped to the ground, and then people started running, and everybody just started running out and scattering. And I ran across the street to the Wendy's, and thank God for this person who was one of our customers. He let me get in his car, and we drove away.
Do you hear bullets? I'm sure. Were there screaming and yelling?
It was like complete chaos. Like, if I can relate it to anything, I see it was literally like a scene out of a movie. People are screaming, help me, I'm trapped. And people are getting trampled. Like, there was no clear exit sign at the club, so we didn't know which door to take or where to go. But it was just really, really, really crazy. And not to mention the fact that they had bottles and they had glass cups. As soon as everybody heard it, they threw it on the floor. So everybody came out like either scraped or like with huge gashes on themselves.
And that is a series of clips of witness testimonies. People were in the club, worried parents outside the club on Saturday night in Orlando after this massacre. 50 people had taken place. Special thanks to the Guardian newspaper for compiling those videos. My guest is Andrew Patrick. He is the Deputy Communications Director at the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Andrew, the day-to-day shootings that take place obviously don't get as much media coverage as the mass shootings, but the pain of losing a loved one or the trauma of having a near brush with gun violence is so hard for us to express and understand unless we go through it ourselves. Why is there just this reluctance in our country to not see that this trauma, this grief, this pain is so important, is so real, we need to tackle it?
Absolutely. When you our thoughts go out to these family members and the LGBT community and the entire Orlando community in dealing with such a massive tragedy. We have survivors and family members on our staff, and we work closely with many survivors and family members on this issue. And they've told me that when something like this occurs, it's like it's happening to them again. It's just so difficult to comprehend and understand, and it's very emotional for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. We need to keep this in the news. There is a tendency that has happened, and it's happening less likely, which is very good, to be upset, be angry, be sad, then forget about it until the next mass shooting occurs. That is not happening anymore. People are continuing to raise this issue. We don't think it is appropriate to have a country where you can buy a gun without a background check, whether at a gun store or online. We don't think it's appropriate for people on the terror watch list to be able to buy a gun when they can't even board a plane.
And yet, sort of pro-NRA legislators have, you know, on the one hand will condemn terrorism or ISIS and all of these groups, and then on the other hand will refuse to back these fairly basic measures. Even if you put aside your sort of opposition to the idea of a terror watch list, you would imagine that the people who are condemning Islamic terrorism or Muslim fundamentalist terrorism would at least adopt this position, but they don't.
Right. This is something. When you are the gun lobby, when you are the NRA, and your interest is selling more guns, you do not want any laws to come about to prevent you from selling that product. They also have a tremendous amount of money to line the pockets of members of Congress to make sure that no action occurs. It is irresponsible from our point of view to continue to see this day-to-day and horrible shooting after horrible shooting, and all you do is a moment of silence and offer your thoughts and prayers. Right. It is time for action in this country, not empty gestures.
Now, Andrew, let's try to put this into perspective, because immediately the right wing in this country, who are of course aligned, generally speaking, with the gun lobby, would like to simply turn this into a conversation about homegrown terrorism. And I'm wondering if you can give us some statistics of all the shootings, of all the numbers of people that die in this country from gun violence. If you just, say, prevent suspected terrorists, et cetera, from getting their hands on guns, how many gun deaths would you actually stop? Should this be a conversation about homegrown terrorism, quote unquote, or about easy availability to guns?
Well, exactly. Easy availability to guns. This was another young man who had hate in his heart and wanted to kill. He found that outlet to kill. That is not different from the shooting in Charleston where a white male murdered 9 African Americans. It's not different from the Colorado Springs shooting at Planned Parenthood. If you are looking to do evil, you can find the outlet in order to assist you in doing that evil.
And did the Orlando shooter obtain his gun legally, as far as you know?
As far as I know, he was interviewed by the FBI twice, but was still able to purchase a gun legally, which is a problem with the background check system. We obviously don't have the right information going into that if we can't stop someone who traveled to Saudi Arabia, who was interviewed by the FBI, who raised serious red flags, not even just about the terrorism aspect, but the abuse of his ex-wife, the outburst and violent temper that his coworkers described. He even mentioned to one coworker about killing people. This is information that needs to be flagged to the authorities, and that is something that we think there are laws out there, the gun violence restraining order, that could remove this individual from having access to firearms so easily.
Right, and he had, I understand, an assault rifle. So let's talk about the fact that this one person was able to kill so many people without help, without having a second person. It wasn't a group of people that committed a massacre. And I think it's important for us to also be clear about the history-making aspect of this horrific incident, that I understand it was the worst mass shooting by a single shooter in U.S. history. We've had incidents in U.S. history, you know, like the Tulsa race riot, for example, where 300 people were killed those were groups of people going around killing other groups of people. This was a single person that managed to kill 50 people before he himself died. How was he able to do that?
Well, this weapon, the AR-15, has become the official gun of mass killers. We saw it in San Bernardino. We saw it in Newtown. It has become a popular gun to kill as many people as you can. If this rifle shot 103 people and killed 49 of them, and it's a sporting rifle, then I think we need to redefine the definition of sport, because that is a weapon of war. It is not used for hunting. I think it's illegal in Florida to it's illegal in Pennsylvania to use these type of guns in other states for hunting. So really, the assault weapons ban is something that I know presidential candidate Hillary Clinton brought up today, reinstating it, as well as it's gaining some interest on Capitol Hill. So it's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed. Those type of weapons are not used to kill deer.
Right. And the other incident that I didn't get to mention yet is that at the Los Angeles Gay Pride Parade on Sunday, police actually stopped an Indiana man who, as far as I can tell, is a white American man, with a car chock full of weapons, with likely the intention to basically do something similar at the Pride Parade in LA. Again, sort of proving this idea that if we want to prevent deaths, if we want to prevent the terror of guns, rather than framing this as something that only happens at the hands of Muslim fundamentalists, we have to frame this as something that happens at the hands of people who have any kind of various hate in their heart. They may or may not be mentally ill. And actually, studies have shown that the mentally ill tend to really not be violent. There's just a small percentage of all gun violence that's done at the hands of mentally ill people. So just, you know, somebody who is impulsive and who has access to easy guns. And LA might have turned into Orlando had the police not stopped this one man.
Right? Or it could have been even worse, which is really unfathomable. The access to guns. Hate does not kill, but easy access to guns makes hate deadly. And you can hate different things, but when you have that easy access to a weapon that can kill 49 people within 10 minutes or less, it is a dangerous combination. And that's why we need to work on identifying people who cause danger. The greatest indicator of future violence is past violence. So the red flags were there. It just needed to be reported and stopped.
And I'm really glad you brought it up in that way, that future violence is past violence, particularly the fact that the Orlando shooter had a history of domestic violence, right? And we see that this is a really important indicator. Domestic violence isn't taken nearly as seriously enough in our legal system as it should be. Let's also talk about the fact that often victims are women. I mentioned two other incidents, one of this woman, Jessica White, in the Bronx in New York. She died shielding her three children from an attacker in the park. What a tragic story. And then in New Mexico, Juan David Villegas Hernandez, who allegedly shot his wife and four children. Women and children, if we don't look at just the mass shootings, how often are they the victims of gun violence?
A gun in the household is a lethal combination when it comes to domestic violence. You are, I believe, 500 times more likely to be killed in a domestic violence household with a gun in the house. America is a dangerous place for women when it comes to gun violence. I don't know the statistics right off my head, but I believe it's 11 times more likely than other civilized countries for a woman to be killed by a lover or spouse. And these are tragic numbers. These are tragic events that you have mentioned, and yet it happens every day. It doesn't get the same press or headlines that Orlando does, but it is the daily toll of gun deaths that add up to this 33,000 people killed every single year. I believe more than motor vehicle accidents now.
Wow. Okay. So what can we do? I mean, this is kind of the question that comes up after every mass shooting. But as we've been discussing, it's a day-to-day tragedy in the United States. The mass shootings are the ones that get the spike in media coverage. But if we want to deal with the scourge of gun violence, political action needs to happen now rather than wait for the next mass shooting. And even the mass shootings aren't doing anything to convince the right wing, the NRA, that this is something that needs to end. You know, do you have any hope? 3 years after Sandy Hook, we're having this conversation again. What can people do?
Well, Sandy Hook was the catalyst for the current movement we've seen. More people are involved. More people are talking about it. More people are contacting their legislators. More people are becoming single-issue voters on the gun violence issue. They will not support a candidate for office at any level that does not support stronger gun laws. So there are, you can become part of your local gun violence prevention groups. There's national groups, ours and others, that are working every day to find evidence-based ways to prevent gun violence and give a voice to the majority. Polls show overwhelmingly these are supported. Give a voice to them in standing up and saying, we've had enough. The change is going to come from the people. It is time for America to adopt stronger gun laws.
Andrew, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for your organization.
Yes, it is with a Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, and that's csgv.org.
And we'll post that to our site later today as well. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
Andrew Patrick is the Deputy Communications Director at the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.